What do you do if you keep ending up in relationships with people who don't treat you right? How do you change that pattern once and for all? And how do you handle it if a relationship starts out great, but after a few years just doesn't seem like such a great match anymore? And last but not least, how can you make your sex life more healing, deeper, and more exciting? Welcome to the Deeper Dating Question and Answer episode, where I answer your most personal, pressing questions about love, sex, and intimacy. And I do it in such a way that each one of you can apply these insights to the particulars of your own love life. So stay tuned to the Deeper Dating Podcast.
If you've ever been disillusioned, disappointed, or discouraged in your search for love, and you know there has to be a better way to find the healthy, soul-filling love you've always longed for, then you've discovered the podcast for you. I know, as Ken's work personally has led me to find the love of my life. So here's your host of Deeper Dating, Ken Page.
Hello, and welcome to the Deeper Dating Podcast. I'm Ken Page, and every week I'm going to bring you the greatest insights, the most powerful practices, and the most essential findings that I know for everyone who wants to find love and keep it flourishing and heal their lives in the present. Because the skills of dating are nothing more than the skills of love, and the skills of love are the greatest skills of all for a happy life. You can also find the whole transcript of this episode at deeperdatingpodcast.com. And if you're interested in applying these ideas and the deeper dating approach to your own intimacy journey, you can learn more about my classes and courses and upcoming intensives at deeperdatingpodcast.com. And by the way, if you like what you're hearing here, it would be a tremendous gift if you subscribed on iTunes and left me a review. So thanks so much for that. I also want to say, last piece of housekeeping before we begin, that everything I share in this podcast is educational in nature. It's not medical or psychiatric advice or treatment of any emotional, physical, or psychological condition. And if you're experiencing any serious psychological or psychiatric conditions, please seek professional help. And if it feels like a true emergency, please get emergency help right now. Your life is too precious to put at risk. So today is our Q&A episode, and our first question is from Danielle.
Hi, Ken. Thank you so much for doing these podcasts. They are just absolutely priceless for me right now. I'm going through a breakup. It was about going on to almost a year now. I'm 52. I've not really been able to sustain any kind of relationship. I've done a lot of work on myself, but I end up finding men who my friends tease me are basically projects. I've only recently realized that very infrequently did they really care about how I felt? I think, in fact, I've never had anybody end a relationship with me because I spent all my time doing everything I could to make them happy, which is a total recreation of my childhood for sure. But my question is, how do I stop attracting these projects? I'm losing hope. I'm 52. I don't want to be single the rest of my life. I really long for a deep connection with someone, but I only am meeting people who are really not good for me, who have not done any work at all, who are angry and bitter and blaming, and they accuse me of things, and I end up almost becoming their therapist while we're together. And I just can't do it anymore. I don't want this kind of relationship anymore. I want something so much more. So if you can make some suggestions for me, I would really deeply appreciate it. And again, I am so very grateful for your podcasts. Thanks very much. And my name is Danielle. Thank you.
Hi, Danielle. Thanks for sharing with such vulnerability and bringing up such rich and important issues. First, what I want to say to you is you have hit a bottom. You have reached a point where you're not only saying, I can't do these kind of bad relationships anymore, you're reaching a point where your intention is so clear that you want something better, something real, something lasting, something healthy, something that sits well with your soul, like the real deal. And I hear your intention in that, and I think that's wonderful. You've also said a lot about yourself in this, and you've said a lot about the kind of people that you have been seeing and dating and in relationships with. And what you said about these kind of guys is that they are not generous, that they take from you, that your tendency to give matches their tendency to take, and not only take but blame and become really unkind. You have articulated your what I call attractions of deprivation, which is good because it's like when you would go to the post office and see the picture of the bad guys that you had to kind of keep your eye out for. The more clear the patterns and the nuances of your attractions of deprivation are to you, the more clear you're going to be on catching them early on. And I hear you say you don't want those kind of relationships anymore. So I want to walk you through the journey to be able to change your patterns. And I want to do this for everyone who's listening as well. I'm going to take you through the journey that I teach in my book and I teach in my intensives. And it's a four-step process, but we're going to be talking about the first two steps. The first one is, what are your core gifts? Because in every situation like this, it is so important to start out recognizing the parts of yourself that have gotten stepped on in past relationships, naming them, seeing their worth, seeing the gold in them so that you can dignify them, because that is the beginning of the unspooling of this whole kind of pattern. So that's where we're going to start. And I'm going to ask questions of everybody who's listening that you can think about, kind of fill in the blanks questions to help you think about each of these points, to help you transform your intimacy journey in some pretty wonderful, solid, healthy, good ways. Okay. The first step, and it's the first step that I spend huge amounts of time with in my classes and in my book, is the naming of your core gifts. So what I want to say to you, Danielle, is that you've described a situation that could be considered kind of codependent. You give and give, and you're like the therapist for these people, and they take and take. And then they blame you and hurt you for not giving well enough or not giving enough. I'll be right back after this. If you're interested in accelerating and deepening your search for love, I want to invite you to a very special project, the Deeper Dating Intensive. I only offer it twice a year, and it's a 6-month journey working closely with me and an amazing community to transform each member's search for love. And you can learn more at deeperdatingintensive.com. And if it feels like a match, on that page, you can set up a free one-on-one session with me to explore possibilities. I look forward to connecting if this speaks to you. Welcome back, etc. That would be what would be called codependency. But what I want to say about codependency is codependency has gotten a really bad rap. The issue, and I think that people frame the generosity, which I believe is the core gift at the heart of codependency, people frame that generosity in a pathologizing way, like you shouldn't be so generous. That's not true. Your generousness, your generosity is holy. It's you. It is a core gift. The issue is that if you don't know how to honor it as a commodity that's rare in this world and precious, something beautiful, something that you should love, if you don't know that, you will keep drawing people like this into your life. The place where you give without awareness of boundaries is exactly the place where you will draw people who take without awareness of boundaries. So the first step is to recognize this fabulous generosity. Don't think that's something to be ashamed of, because it's not. It is your treasure. And when you know that, when you dignify that quality, when you begin to name it, honor it, and think, who in my life values it and gives the same back? That's your tribe. That's going to be the kind of guy you want to date. That's going to be the kind of friends you want to have. Because you, if you try to dampen or put down your generosity, this wonderful, wonderful gift, so that you're more kind of appropriate or not codependent, you will be robbing your soul of oxygen, robbing your being of oxygen. You need to be able to be that generous, generous person who has so much to give. But you need to learn to listen to the part of you that says, oh, I don't feel so good because I'm not getting. I'm being deprived. I'm not being given to. So what I want to say to you first is to honor your generosity. It's gold. There's no two ways about that. But from now on, what you want to look for is only guys who also have an innate quality of generosity. That's it. Period. The end. And that's how we begin to learn to date differently. So for everyone who's listening, what I want to say to you is to think about, what are the parts of you that in past relationships you feel like were stepped on, milked, taken advantage of? Take a minute and just think of one or two of those qualities. Those are core gift places. Unfortunately, because we get treated that way, we learn to be ashamed of those parts instead of championing them and dignifying them and making much, much better choices. Until we treasure those parts of ourselves, your loyalty, maybe some of you that has been stepped on, your generosity, your truth telling, whatever those qualities are, the first stage is to name them and to honor them. Okay, the second stage is to look at your attractions. And what I would say is, Danielle, it's like a mold. If you put a plaster mold around something, it takes the opposite shape. It takes the like kind of opposite shape of whatever it is that you are taking a mold of. If you are taking a mold of something that is convex, like bulging outwards, the mold will be concave. It'll be bulging inward. Our attributes, and the powerful, powerful thing here is those core gift attributes of all of us, the way we treat them defines who we are attracted to and who's attracted to us, but particularly who we're attracted to in very deep ways. So there is a process here where your generosity has been enslaved, has been colonized, has been milked, has been taken advantage of, and then you've been stepped on. As you begin to treasure that quality, watch what happens. And I say this to everyone with whatever qualities you identified. It's really true. As you begin to dignify those qualities little by little, your sexual and romantic attractions are going to change. Danielle, you're going to start losing your taste for those guys, but slowly, not quickly. It's like a stepping stone process. Don't think it's going to end immediately. But as Marianne Williamson said, and I love this quote, the problem is not that you're attracted to guys who don't treat you right. The problem is you give them your number. So I think that's a really, really key point. In this second stage, we learn to only choose people with whom these qualities feel safe and valued. Period. The end. Nobody else. When we make that choice, everything begins to change. So, Danielle, you want to make that change? Those are some of the steps that you do that with. And each one of you who's listening, now think about that, the steps, the qualities, the attributes that you described. What if you made a pact with yourself that from now on, you are going to only look for and only to continue to pursue people with whom those parts of you feel safe, seen, and valued? And reciprocated. The last thing I want to say is that to create change like we're talking about, which is a characterological, deep and profound change, is conceptually, it sounds easy. In its macro level, it's very simple. But when it comes to the nitty-gritty of dating and meeting people and early dating and later dating and all of that, we still get stuck in our own patterns. No matter how fabulous the idea, and I think these are life-changingly important ideas that really work, no matter how well they work, if you don't have a support team, it's going to be too difficult to make these changes on your own in almost every case. So, Danielle, what I encourage you to do is, if you're reading the book Deeper Dating, get a learning partner, because it's a course in a book, to help you with making this huge change. Or you might want to be in one of my groups or my intensives, or there might be another teacher whose work really resonates with you, who has a community of learning. Follow those people. Get involved in getting that kind of support, because it's really essential. We're like rubber bands. Left to our own devices, we shrink to our most comfortable small state. We need to be held out in a consistent way to something bigger and better if we're really going to create characterological change. Therefore, what I want to say is, even if it's none of the things I mentioned, even if it's just a wise and caring friend with whom you say, this is my intention, I don't want to date guys who take advantage of my generosity. In fact, I only want to date guys who are innately generous themselves. And I want to be able to feel good about these parts of myself and give them freely and with joy, because that's how I'm built. And I can only do that with someone who does the same. Everyone who's listening, think about the qualities you mentioned. How could you do the same with those qualities? Because for you to be happy, you need to be able to express those parts of yourself, not hold them back in a stingy way because the world doesn't get them. You want those precious people who do get those qualities. So that's my last piece that I want to say is, get support, because it's too hard to make these kind of changes on our own. Thank you, Danielle. Here's the next question from an anonymous caller.
Hi, Ken. I'm a few years into a relationship that I thought originally was one of inspiration. I assumed that my deep wounding was my shame around my health and autoimmune illness. This man loves to love in a big way and care for me, which drew me in originally. But I'm not all that inspired by him. Our politics are different, and that's a turnoff to me. And he's not really my type in a lot of ways. He's kind of more of a big talker, but not terribly ambitious or successful. He's only 62 and wants to retire and work part-time, but doesn't really have the financial means to do that. So I think that is also stressing me out. So my question is, I'm wondering if maybe that was not my wounding, perhaps, or did I just not pick the right guy or get, you know, more specific about who I wanted to be involved with? And the other option is, I have had a history of being very critical and being the person who leaves relationships. And, you know, so I'm open to that also being an option too. So I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you.
Well, this is such an important question in so many ways and has a universal quality. A few pieces here. One piece is, what do you do in a relationship that started out really nice, really feeling really new, really healthy, and then you find that you're just not happy in it? Another, or maybe you're happy in some ways, but troubled and unhappy in other ways. Another part of this is, what if you're struggling with, is this me? Am I being too critical? Am I being too sensitive? Versus, these things bother me. I feel troubled by this, and that feels real. That kind of complexity about which side should you land on. And I'd like everybody to take a minute to think about that. Have you ever been in that kind of situation in a relationship? Both of those pieces, where a relationship seemed really good at the beginning, but then you began to experience dissatisfaction that felt significant. The other question that struggle between, am I being too sensitive? Am I being too critical? Or should I, is this a valid concern? So I want to share a few thoughts about what to do in this kind of situation, a few steps. And there are four steps that we're going to go through that are very empowering and very healing. First step, notice what it is that's bothering you. And don't begin by thinking, am I being too critical? Begin by holding your criticism, the things that bother you, let's say, better than criticism, in a way that doesn't shame you for those feelings. Assume that if these things are bothering you, maybe you're skewing them in a negative direction, maybe you're misinterpreting some things, but there probably really is something here to bother you. So the first step really is to honor that, because if you squelch that, it will be a few things will happen. You will shame yourself for your own gut and intuition. The other thing that will happen is you'll become angry. And many of us who have had a history of seeing things, especially in our family, that no one wanted us to talk about, become what I call angry truth tellers. The truth kind of burns inside us and we feel we need to say something, but it's laced with a kind of anger because it's been suppressed for so long. So we want to honor the truth, and I encourage you to honor the truth of those things, those exact things that bother you, which to me all made sense. They all seemed valid. So for each one of you who's listening, if you're in a situation like this, start out right now by validating the truth. It makes sense that I feel this way because it's rational that I feel this way because. When you do that, kind of that inner child space will begin to calm down because it won't be told that it's being crazy. And again, when we try to outsmart our intuition, it either goes into hiding and bites us in the butt, or it becomes strident in a way that is alienating, or both.
I'll be right back after this.
Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Margaret Paul, the co-creator of the powerful self-healing inner bonding process. I'd like to invite you to begin to learn about inner bonding with my free ebook, The Four Mistakes That Block Self-Love and Relationships, and my free webinar, Three Secrets to Loving Yourself and Others. I look forward to seeing you at the webinar.
Step one, honor the validity of what's bothering you. Step two, look for the gifts. For you, I would encourage you to look for your gifts in this. You are obviously, you're talking about a quality of ambition inside of you, a kind of financial responsibility, I'm assuming and imagining that those are parts of who you are. Honoring those, honoring the fact that you have allowed yourself to be cared for in this relationship, which is a wonderful thing because receiving is a huge and deep intimacy capacity and an essential one. And also see the gift in your truth-telling, in the awarenesses that you have and the validity of your intuition. And then see the gifts in your partner. You have described somebody who's absolutely, unequivocally got a big heart and is caring and loving and has cared for you. Those are beautiful things. Allow yourself to list those qualities in your head. That's a great act to do, a wonderful thing to do. So allow yourself to do that. So everybody, think of a person with whom you're having a dilemma like this and allow yourself to just list in your head their deepest qualities. When you've done all of that, there is a completely essential next step. And that is to stop only trying to work it out in your own head. Now it's time to work it out in the relationship, because relationships are dynamic things, and we are dynamic beings, so we change. And the glory of relationships is that we change because of the relationships. If you're trying to work this all out in your head, it will become stagnant, it will become convoluted, it'll be like an ingrown toenail of your brain and your thinking and your heart. It is meant to have oxygen for a few reasons. One, you got to hear what your partner thinks, because your partner might have opposite concerns that will blow your mind. Like, wow, I didn't realize I was doing this. Two, your partner needs to hear what hurts you, what's not meeting your needs, what concerns you. And of course, the rule is say what you mean what you say, but don't say it mean. Take some time to think about why this matters to you. Maybe you came from a family where there was lack of financial responsibility, and so it's a kind of like tender spot for you, a vulnerable spot. Maybe it's because you're concerned that you might have to be taking care of him and you don't want to be doing that. You want someone who can take care of themselves. See what it is, but see if you can frame things in an I way. Huge rule of feedback. We often think that the you is more powerful, but let me tell you, the I is more powerful. Someone hears you're not being responsible. They shut down. They circle their wagons. No one wants to hear that. It's a horrible feeling, and you circle your wagons and you kind of shut down around it. Even though it feels like a powerful thing to say to someone, what you get is a defensive block from the other person. Whereas if you said, I feel scared that I'm going to need to support you, for example, that'll go in. They'll hear that. I statements actually have a tremendous amount of more power. But the main point here is do not try to work this out in your head. Give yourself, your partner, and the relationship the gift of letting this become an evolving process, because you and your partner need to be talking about this stuff in such a way that you create a shared language around your conflicts. And that's a good and wonderful thing to do. So big, big piece here is don't think you need to work it out just in your head. The final thing I want to say, and this is just a question, is you spoke about your woundedness around, wound of shame around health conditions that you have. And I'm wondering if there has been enough healing in you emotionally, spiritually, partly even because of your partner, where that now is less of an issue, where you don't need someone who is going to take care of you because you feel more healed and more ready to take care of yourself. If that's so, you are changing. Your partner might be someone who gets their greatest sense of empowerment by giving. If so, they might feel disempowered. Your partner might feel disempowered as well. This could be a sea change period in the relationship. And too often, people end relationships because they say, we both changed, without having done the rich, ongoing, complicated, struggly, but wonderful work of changing together. So those are my thoughts. And good luck in taking these steps. And each one of you, good luck in taking these steps of first honoring your experience, noticing the gifts in you and your partner, and then trying to work it out gradually, caringly, kindly, in real time. The next question is from Steve.
Firstly, I want to say that I'm a big fan of yours, Ken, and have enjoyed your insights and wisdom over the years. My new wife and I, we've known each other for about 6 months, and we have an absolutely fabulous sexual relationship. But just recently, I've started noticing that we are beginning to get a little bit used to each other. And do you have any tips for maintaining that spontaneity and excitement that we've had for the past 6 months, or at least keeping it as alive and prolonging it for as long as possible? Or do you think that it's inevitable that it will fade and we'll just have to resign ourselves to it being less inspiring and important in our lives? Thank you, Ken.
Steve, this is a great and important question. We're going to talk about this now, and I hope that some of the information is helpful to anybody in a new relationship, or also there are some kind of very important universal pieces to this as well. So, Steve, from what I understood, you have known your wife for only 6 months, and in that time you've gotten married. So this is a really, really new relationship, and you guys haven't stopped moving yet. Getting to know each other, knowing each other, getting married, joining your lives together in half a year, that's a lot. It's going to be exciting and thrilling, and those kind of thrills can create sex that is incandescent. That's fabulous, and may you continue to have that kind of sex, but there's a calming down that happens after a while, and that calming down requires the development of different sexual circuitry, and we're going to talk about that. There are three questions that each of us can ask ourselves, and they're three fabulous questions about sex to help deepen our sex life, make it more exciting, and also make it more healing in very profound ways. The first question is this. What makes you feel safe in sex? And what makes you feel unsafe in sex? This is a really important question and something very deep to think about. We often don't think of safety in terms of sex. And I don't just mean unsafe sex or sex that can hurt you. I mean a deep sense of emotional safety. That's a really important thing. And when this kind of wild thrill of newness calms down, you might notice more ways in which you and your partner either feel safe or unsafe. So that's a rich question for everybody to think about. The second question is, and this is a deep one, what moves you and touches you in sex? In this calming down that happens, we kind of touch a deeper level of being. And in that deeper level of being, we can deepen and enrich and widen our sex life by thinking, what kind of pacing, what kind of ways of being touched, what kind of ways of touching each other, what kind of ways of holding each other make me go into that place where there's this dropping down into a deep sense of bonding, intimacy, being moved, maybe being moved to tears. That happens sometimes in sex. What enables me to go into that deeper, deeper space? That's a rich and important question that is huge. And what happens is sometimes, because you both are still getting to know each other in many ways, when there sometimes needs to be a period of recalibration. When you make a deeper commitment, often the sex doesn't match up with the emotions right away. The emotions are scared all of a sudden as things become more real to connect with this wild sex. So there's a process of recalibration where we often feel a sense of sexual discomfort or lack of turn on. And it's often because our heart is trying to catch up with our genitals. So these are some rich things to think about when it comes to the issue of enriching your sex life, not just making it more exciting or keeping the excitement up, but bringing the depth up to match the excitement. And the third question is, what really turns you on? And that's a rich and important question, too, for you and your wife to be able to speak about together. Like, what are the secret things that really turn you both on? And that's a gift also to be able to talk about. So what I think you might want to think of this as, Steve, is an enriching and maturing part of your sexual and intimate relationship with your wife. So that's all the time we have for questions. I hope these answers were helpful and supportive and help each one of you think about your own intimacy journey. And I look forward to seeing you next week on the Deeper Dating Podcast.
And that's it for today's episode of Deeper Dating. Be sure to go to deeperdatingpodcast.com as Ken has a few more gifts for you. Then join us on the next episode.